Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Better Off Red. I'm Pip Adam. Thanks heaps for listening. There's rain on the roof. You can probably hear it. Rain. It's quite nice, I suppose. So episode 2. Sarah Bainbridge and I got together and we had a chat about David Vann's Legend of a Suicide. Gosh, what's to be said about this book? Well, hopefully we say a lot about this book. It seems so appropriate that it's raining. It just, yeah, you're suddenly in Alaska and you're all by yourself. Anyway, it's a magnificent book. It's an odd book. I've put some information about Sarah Bainbridge up on the blog, betterrednz.wordpress.com. And it's relatively easy to find out stuff about Legend of a Suicide. You can sort of Google it and have a look around. But what I think about it when I think about it is it's this kind of incredible... One review talked about it being a, fantasia, which I quite liked the idea of, which I think is some kind of musical thing that kind of goes off on absolute tangents but orbits around a similar set of notes. And I think that's what I really love about this book, is that there seems to be... sort of this magnetic attraction to the suicide and all these huge amounts of iron sand sort of, you know, move around it but are always dragged back to the suicide that is at the centre of the book. The other quite outstanding thing about the book, well, for me, which I found incredible, is that the book... Van in this book, and I think also in a couple of his other books, is writing very, very close to personal experience and biographical information. And I think we sort of talk a little bit about how that book departs from that and what that would be like. And we also, Sarah and I also did a course with David Van. He came over to New Zealand and took a masterclass a few years ago. And Sarah and I talk a little bit about what he was like as a teacher, which was pretty incredible and interesting. And we talk a little bit about our writing and, Anyway, I hope you find it interesting. I shouldn't give away too many plots. I'm trying to think if we'd... Spoilers. It's very, yeah. I guess there is that thing that the first time you read this, it's a very fantastic experience to get to chapter 2 and find that, you know, everyone that was gone is back again and we're in a different point of view and what's going on. But we'll probably ruin that for you. Sorry. But maybe you've already read the book. It's a fantastic book. You should go and read it. Maybe you should turn off now and go and read it before you listen to us talk about it. Anyway, have a lovely day and thank you very much. Okay, so we just had to turn the fish bubbler off because I could hear it, and Sarah was saying how appropriate for Legend of a Suicide, and it is, you know, there's lots of fish in here. So I guess what I was thinking about when I knew we were going to talk was I was thinking about the first time I heard about this book, and David Van was talking at the art gallery. Were you there?
No.
I'd imagined you in that place. And I knew nothing about him at all. And he talked about this book, and it sounded astounding. And then he read, pages turning. He read the story about the fish farm, and I just remember thinking, this is quite astounding. And that's how I found out about the book. Can you remember how you found out about the book?
Yeah, I found out about the book through you.
Oh,
so oh, no. I was at home with a toddler and a newborn baby, and I think you came out for a visit, you know, visit the new mother kind of thing, and we went outside, it was winter, and we've got this big wood box by the back door, and I opened it up, and you were just like, oh, and I was like, what? And you were like, oh, I've been thinking a lot about wood lately, and I was like, really? And then you said, have you read Legend of a Suicide by David Van? And I was like, no. but I thought, oh, I'd better, you know. Mm. So that was how I got introduced to the book.
Oh, yeah, because I do remember becoming quite obsessed with making fire, you know, because of the middle story, you know, where the boy and his father are completely isolated and, you know, they're building fire, and a lot of their day is about, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I do remember becoming quite obsessed with fire and wood and making things out of wood. And, yeah, I did become quite obsessed with it. So did you read it then, like when the kids were young?
Yeah, so I read it then. I think that was 2010. Mm, and so yeah. I read it then, and then we actually ended up doing that course with him.
That's right.
So I read the book again right before the class. And so I think I've read it through one more time the whole way through since then.
Yeah.
Every time I've read it, I've cried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really affecting. But I've dipped into it as well. You know, yeah. It's the kind of book you sort of pick up, look at a page, start reading, then you sit down, you know, and then it's not until someone sort of interrupts you that you get up again. It's got that sort of power of pulling you in.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I was also thinking about that as well. I was thinking about how I read this book, you know, like I had that advantage of sort of going to hear him talk, and I was under the illusion, I was under no illusion that it was a, you know, it could be read, you know, not in order. And I think I got heaps out of that. But I do hear what you're saying as well. Like, I have dipped into it in stages, and I find it quite an interesting teaching book as well, you know, because, you know, there is such a range of voice and perspective and stuff like that, that it is a book that I have dipped into, and often to see how you shift from one of the stories to the other story, you know, that kind of leap from one chapter to another. So I think that's really true. Can you remember what you thought, can you remember anything about that experience of reading it for the first time?
Yeah, so I remember thinking it was sort of generally amazing.
Mm,
it's
yeah.
funny now, because it's been a while since I've read it, I can't actually remember. The thing I remember the best is Suquan Island, you know, the one yep. in the middle, the longest piece. And I remember a couple of the other stories. I think it's the first one, which has got like a teenage boy roaming around the neighbourhood in the dark, you know. And then there's another one toward the end where the protagonist goes and visits his father's girlfriend, I think, but she doesn't know who he is or something like that. So I sort of remember bits of them. So it's interesting trying to remember those, but what I remember at the time is thinking that they all made sense, even though they sort of take different trajectories on what could be true, you know. They sort of contradict each other, things in them contradict each other, but they all sort of make sense within themselves. So I found that really interesting.
Yeah. Because I think it was such a revelation. It was a real revelation, this book. Like, I don't think I'd read anything quite like it before. And yeah, like you say, there was that complete contradiction, which seemed so right around an event like this. Like, it just seemed so right that there would be contradiction, and there would be different stories, and there would be different memories. And that's what I love about this as well, is that I don't think it attempts to be factual, eh? Like,
no, I mean, it definitely mines his autobiographical material, which I think all of his books tend to do.
Mm.
But it doesn't point to one particular truth, you know, which is sort of really interesting. I think, yeah, all of his books sort of speak to each other in a way. This is what I think anyway. They all sort of speak to each other in a way that the stories in this particular collection speak to each other. They're sort of like little mirrors up to each other. Although he says he's done with his autobiographical material now.
which kind of makes me sad. I think that's so interesting, like, thinking about, I really like that idea of a mirror, because they do seem to refract each other through, I don't know, yeah, that metaphor is a good one. You know, they do seem to speak to each other, yet, like you say, like, I think about, like, you write incredibly good non-fiction as well as fiction. And I do wonder, this doesn't feel like creative nonfiction, does it? Like, it doesn't feel like a personal essay at all.
No.
And I'm wondering what the freedom, you know, like, I always wonder about what happens when you bring fact into fiction. You know, like, obviously he's done heaps to fictionalize it, but what, yeah, I don't know, like, do you tend to keep yours quite separate, like, when yeah. you're thinking about it? Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think what I really admire his sort of unflinching use of autobiographical material. Like, I remember he was a bit concerned about, I think he was writing Dirt when we did the course with him. And he was a bit concerned about how some of his family members may react to that material, but he was pretty staunch about putting it out there anyway, you know. Yeah, so it's courageous, you know.
I just remember, I don't know, I'm probably completely miscrediting him with this, but I remember him saying once that, I don't know if this is even true, oh my God, slander, but... somebody in the realms of talking about this book, or it may have been him, said, oh, if they wanted me to write nicer things, they should have treated me better. Like, you know, and I sort of thought, that is ballsy as fuck. Like, you know, and I just, I don't know, like, and I do, yeah, I do, because there is that weird thing where, you know, like, although he does sort of, like you say, like, there's courage in it, there's also this wonderful, that's the thing I love about this book as well, is that there seems to be this kind of trying to work out a problem kind of thing, eh? Like, yeah. You know, something has happened, I don't understand how it happened, and here we go, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't feel like revenge or anything.
No,
you know?
No.
But, yeah, one of the things I really loved about it was how he seemed to articulate so well that feeling that you have as a child of responsibility towards your parents' happiness and well-being.
Mm.
And I think it's the best portrayal of that I've ever read, actually. Mm. That was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was quite incredible. And I think, I don't know, yeah, it really is an interesting, it did feel, I think that might have been part of the sort of revelation of the book for me, is that wonderful thing that happens sometimes when I read a book, when I think I've always known that but I've never had words for it.
Yeah.
And it felt like that over and over again. Yeah. It was just like, oh yeah.
It sort of takes you outside of yourself, so you're really invested in the characters' lives and their predicament and their particular thing, but it also takes you deep inside yourself. So I know when I read it, I thought about, like, my own parents breaking up and how devastating it is to see them sort of unravelling and even just to see them cry and stuff like that. So it does that sort of dual thing where it sort of takes you away from yourself but deep inside yourself. Yeah, you're in another world. I remember when I read On the Road, I had the same sort of feeling. I finished it and then I looked up and I remember seeing, like, everything was in colour, you know, after being in that book where everything was sort of grey and ashen and, yeah, so I think it was really successful.
Because it is, and I think that's what I find really interesting is that, you know, like, I think I talked to him, I did interview him when we were on that course as well, and I think I remember talking to him about that idea of darkness and, you know, that he does continue... I don't think I'm wrong in saying this, you know, like, reviewers were quite tough on, you know, does it need to be this dark? And, oh.
Yeah.
And it's really odd because, like, what you're describing and what I feel is that there was some light that came out of reading it, not, do you know what I mean? Like, there was something...
It wasn't gratuitous. It felt really brutal. Like, I've had friends that can't finish it because of the subject matter partly.
Yeah.
And it's just too full on. But another thing, you know, is he really doesn't back away so if people are having a fight, you know, he lets them fight and fight and fight. So that's an interesting technique, you know, rather than cutting away from the action, he just sort of keeps on going, forces you to look at it again and again.
And that's what, I think that's what, I was talking to a student yesterday and I was thinking, this is pure Van, you know, this is totally, what I am saying to you is coming straight from that course that we did with him, where it is that thing of keep the camera rolling, you know, like, at that point where you want people to be quiet, make them talk, you know, at that point where, you know, like, it seems resolved, flare it up again, you know, and I just, that is something that I am sure comes from these books, you know, this and Caribou Island and the others, but also I think comes from that course we did with them, eh?
Yeah.
That was, so when did we, do you remember when that course was?
No.
Neither do I.
I mean, I think it was in 2010.
Yeah.
Or maybe early 2011. I have a feeling that Seth was about 10 months old or something.
Yeah, because so he came over and did a masterclass. He has quite, you see, what I didn't realise when I saw him talking at the art gallery is that he does have ties with New Zealand, doesn't he? Like he's often here, and you know, he did the masterclass, and I think I just like applied straight away because I'd read this book. And what was odd was this book was extremely, it was a massive source text for the PhD that I was doing. Like I kept returning again and again to it. And and like trying to work out the structure of it and how it works, you know, how it works as a book. So, you know, like, so yeah, the course was announced. I applied. You were there as well. Like, yeah. And it was quite a great course. Was Chloe on it as well? Yeah. Chloe Lane was there.
I think you know... rounded the troops.
Did I? Everyone check it out. But and it was a really, I found it quite, it was such an interesting course. What do you remember of it?
Well, like, I remember that he had these specific sort of quite clear rules about what makes a story.
Mm.
He was quite interested in Greek tragedy.
Mm.
You know, protagonist, antagonist, the problem. And, but then I think you've mentioned this before, that the stories that he put forward to us and that often didn't follow that formula. But it was quite refreshing to have someone just sort of say, this is writing, this is how you do it, you know. And actually, after the course finished, I tried to write a short story that sort of really closely followed those rules, you know, protagonist, antagonist, and this particular problem, and symbol, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was pretty good. And then I brought it to workshop and it got totally slammed. But I think that all those things are quite good to have in the back of your mind for the times when you get stuck. Just to have anything, really, to try to see if it works.
Because I think for me it was my first, I think this was the other thing that I was obsessed with, was that it was my first kind of, you know, like I've always wanted to go to school in America, you know, always wanted to, you know, do some amazing MFA, which will turn me into a proper writer. And you know, it was my first opportunity to be taught by an American, I think. Like Richard Ford had come and done a short course when we were in the MA, but which was amazing as well. But this was like coming every week, bringing your work, seeing what a workshop was like. And I must admit that prescriptiveness was not something I was expecting, you know.
No.
Yet, it was so attractive. You know, it was so seductive because I was like, oh my God, you know, if I just, where's my protagonist? Where's my antagonist? You know, they have to have the same problem, but they're both dealing with it in different ways. And, you know, I just remember finding it so fucking attractive. You know, like it's, you know, this is how we write books.
Even
first
paragraph, confusing.
Yeah.
Second paragraph, information. You know? Yeah, I totally wanted to buy into that wholesale.
And then it was really interesting, and like you say, I think that it has been incredibly helpful for me for revision. You know, like, I mean, I may not be able to generate stories using that model, although I did try, and, you know, again, I had a similar thing where I tried and it didn't, I don't know, it was ripped apart in a workshop, I think, as well, but you know, it is, I think that it is such a good tool for teaching. You see, that's the other thing, is that it was great for him to teach us those things. Like, that seemed like a good thing. And there was all that great stuff about linguistics as well.
Yeah, which was completely new to me because, you know, my background's science, sort of not English lit anyway. So all the nitty-gritty about language and that, I just lapped it up. That was great.
It was really good. And I think you know, the thing that I really take from it is, you know, that incredible thing that he kept talking about, And it's worked, I think it's worked really well for my writing, is that idea of getting people out of their heads. You know, like my writing was people reflecting on things and being isolated. And you know, and he would just push and push for getting them into conversation or into action or into a place, or, you know, and there was something that worked so well with my writing with that, you know, like you know, I always want to write about isolated people that don't have to talk to anyone. You know, like that's what I am. You know, like I'm fantasy, you know, living my fantasy. And to actually get them out and get them uncomfortable seemed to do interesting things. And dialogue. He often talked about dialogue, which was quite good.
He also said, don't piss the reader off.
Yeah.
Which is
such an interesting...
okay, whatever you do, guys.
And then some... I think that is what is so interesting about him. Like, I think we emailed about this, but there was a very interesting moment in the course that you alluded to where he was talking about Blood Meridian, which is, like, his favourite book. Yeah. And, you know, like... And he suddenly had this moment... Like, it unfolded in front of us where he realised that his rules didn't fit Blood Meridian. And he realised that his rules didn't fit all the books that he loved. And it was this really interesting moment because I remember thinking, I'm not sure your rules fit your books. Like, I think, you know, and just that idea of don't piss the reader off.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, I can see how Legend of a Suicide could be a frustrating book.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I think especially because of the different what-ifs.
Yeah.
You know, people, they're like, but hey, you know, they're supposed to be dead, or people have a really hard time with that, I think. But I think that's what makes it so memorable, is that it is sort of like you're at sea a bit, you know, you're on a ship and it's rolling this way and you know, you balance. They still all work, but they're not completely in sync with each other. Yeah,
because there was another thing he often talked to us about was cohesion.
Yes.
You know, like the idea, and in Legend of a Suicide, there's this odd, it's not a plot cohesion as in, well, it is within the stories, like you say. I think that's a really good comment, that the stories themselves feel like little packages of complete plot. But yeah, it is that thing where it seems to be tugged along by the suicide, and it's wrapped in the net of the suicide, and people reappear, but there's this odd, it's just this interesting idea of truth, you know, like it's not a set of what's that thing called when you do something and do something,
like chronological,
and also what do you call it, cause and effect, you know, like it doesn't sort of roll like that as well. Really weird.
It's interesting that you use net, you know, with the whole thing.
Oh my god,
it's interesting with his, you know, with the rules and things though, because I mean, whether we were picking that stuff up more than it was intended, because we're sort of grasping it at it. But the other thing I remember him talking about was sort of with fish, you know, when you're pulling up a fish, sort of being looking into your imagination, so you know, the story sort of comes out, you pull it up, and as it gets closer to the surface it becomes clearer, which doesn't seem to really fit with the whole rules business, but sort of harks, you know, you sort of hear carvers and things talking about, you know, releasing the sculpture or whatever from inside the block of marble, and or even I think Stephen King talks about it's sort of like in a archaeological sense, you know, it's like chipping away at a fossil, or you know, to find a story that it sort of suggests it's sort of already there. And then that sort of ties in with sort of themes about fate, you know, like with the suicide being this big event, that it seems to pull everything in toward it, you know, that you can't sort of outrun it, outgun it.
Because
get around it.
I was just thinking about that thing, like you say, with the rules, and I reckon that's really true. Because I think I took things absolutely sort of evangelical, you know, fundamentally. I was just like, oh fuck yes. But I think that wonderful story about the story in the middle, how it surprised him, you know, like you know, he has that technique. I think he talked about his technique being that he reads what he's written before, then starts again and moves forward, you know, he doesn't, and one day that thing that surprised him in there, and that I think that was another thing that blew my mind. Like, I don't know,
because it was so surprising. It was interesting that it was surprising to him as well, but it was so surprising, but yet it felt so inevitable and so right. And when I read it, that is the thing that made me really want to start doing some more writing, because I had those little kids, I was just coming out of the baby fog, you know, And I thought, wow, you know, I want to be able to not only write something that feels like that to read, but to be in that place when you're writing where something like that comes up and it absolutely fits. Yeah, just amazing.
It's incredible because, you know, like we've sort of been talking about rules, but that is, it's a feel, it's an amazing emotional experience. Well, I don't know what yeah. sort of, I don't know where it sits in my body, but that wonderful thing where the story, like I know the story and the story knows itself, kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, I remember him describing that and I was the same. I was like, yeah, I want that, you know, I want to be, you know, because he is, that is one role that I took quite, you know, he does write every day, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he gets annoyed and stuff, doesn't he,
if he doesn't write. If someone interrupts, it's like, you know, a prize or something annoying like that. Damn it, yeah, email's not good. But yeah, and I think I do, oh God, you described it so well. That is just such a magnificent feeling, isn't it? It's such a wonderful feeling. Oh, God.
I think the great thing about that course was having read the book so recently and being so influenced by it, you then got to see the things that sort of influenced the author and, you know, like his obsession with Blood Meridian and how that relies so much on landscape. You know, it's like this hell, fiery hell. And then like in Legend of a Suicide, it's sort of like this cold Alaskan version of hell and how that's so important to the landscape, so important to his writing. Yeah, that was really great. I mean, he actually felt sort of physically cold.
Yeah.
And this one and Caribou Island as well.
Yeah, but not so much in Dust.
Yeah, that's
true. I didn't do it. Alaska is huge in it. And it's funny because I just... There was something about Alaska that was so perfect as well. And it actually made me think of you and your writing because of... I don't know, like Alaska feels like this place that you only kind of see in tourist brochures and, you know, like it feels like this magnificent, you know, magnificent, awe-inspiring place.
Yeah.
But it's so wonderful here because you do kind of get to see the snow melting to sludge and, you know, like it, you do get to see the fish shop, you know, the fish factory and... Yeah. You know, the life of the people that live there. And I don't know if I'm getting this right. It might be totally wrong, but, and I think it's my obsession that's playing out, but I'm always interested in places that are, you know, seen as holiday places, but the people that live there all the time. And I know Paikakariki is not like that, but you know what I mean? Like, it is, you know, the, I don't know, like, I was just thinking about the novel.
How do people think about
that? I don't know. I must ask some people. Well, I always think of it as sort of, like, I do think of it as a summer place with, you know, like, a place with the beach and, you know, like, it's kind of like, I guess, for me living in the city, I think that must be amazing. You know, that must be an interesting way to live, that you're living by somewhere that feels like a holiday place. You know, like, there's a beach close, there's, you know, like, there's... You know, like there's a nice little shopping centre. You know what I mean? Like
it's just plug for
Paikakariki. It's great. Or do you have a byline? I don't know.
But I think that Alaska in this book, it does sort of have not tourism-y thing, but it is very beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, the landscape is so beautifully described. You know, I don't want to hunt, but if I was going to want to hunt, this sounds like a pretty cool place to want to hunt.
Yeah.
But it has also got a lot of menace.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of tension in the landscape because it's so unforgiving. It seems to have nothing to do with the people that are in it. It's, yeah, so they really are trying to survive. So it's almost like another character in Suquan Island, you know.
Yeah. I keep slipping into Caribou Island as well. Like I keep slipping. It's really hard to. It's really hard to like, you know, keep the two books sort of. Yeah, I do find it hard to keep the two books separate, and I think that's okay because I mean, in a lot of ways, Caribou Island leaps off. Now I'm gonna mess up. It's his aunt, isn't it? Oh, I can't remember. But Caribou Island begins, you know, is two characters that come from Legend of a Suicide, you know, and it's sort of, so I think it's okay to sort of think of it as a continuation. But
right.
Like, yeah, I just, and the Alaska in there seemed even more terrifying.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
You know, like it just, yeah. Oh, God.
So do you think, are you thinking like in terms of sequel?
Well, I don't know.
Because I didn't, I sort of thought, you know, it's some characters reappearing. Mm. They're not quite in the same guise. I know that in some other of his work, he talks about how his father in real life had really bad sinus problems. Mm. But this is a spoiler, but in Caribou Island, that is Irene, mm. the main character, she is the one that's got these. So, I mean, I just thought, oh, you know, he's mining his
mm. Mm.
family history again. I know that in his father's girlfriend's family, there was a murder-suicide.
Yeah.
And that pops up in another one of his books. So, yeah, I just think he likes messing around with, with the truth.
Because it is, I mean, I don't know, like, yeah, it's such an interesting thing. Like, I do often think, what does it mean when a writer does this? You know, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think I've done it. Like, I'm sort of being like, oh, no, I would never do that. But I'm sure I've done that. And I have switched things around to make them more interesting or to make myself seem like a better person.
Oh, really?
Usually. Yeah, yeah. Like, I acted like a dick, but I'm going to say I acted cool in that situation. And, yeah, it is really interesting, eh?
What I like about these characters is that you get the feeling that if he's tipped away, it's been in a worse way almost,
yeah.
You know, like in a less forgiving way. He never sort of makes people seem better, you know.
No, I really hope not anyway. Yeah. You know, like that would be a disaster. What other things do you think about when you think about this book? Like, because do you think, like, I mean, you said you take it down and stuff. Like, do you sort of, Do you feel like reading it is in your mind ever when you're writing? That's a hard thing to... I think that's a silly question.
No, well, not sort of consciously. Yeah.
Because I just... I don't know, like... Do you remember... There's a short story that you wrote. I can't even remember where I got to read it. It was about a factory. Do you remember that? You were working in a
factory. Oh, a potato factory?
Yeah, potato factory. Not you, the narrator. I was working in a potato factory.
In Scotland, yeah.
In Scotland. That always reminds me of this. I don't know, like, I think because of the factories, this always reminds me of that, you
good
know.
Good work stories.
Good work stories. Yeah. Well, that's another thing this has, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You know,
yeah.
Like, these are working people, you know, like, and I must admit there was something incredibly attractive about that, you know, like... There are boats and fish factories and I don't know.
Yeah, you learn a lot.
Yeah, you do. You know, if you ever... What sort of fish are they that they fish for? He used to go on and on about them.
Oh, I can't even remember.
Neither can I. I'm flicking through trying to find a fish. Any fish will do. Any fish will do. No, I can't find any fish. No fish. Just big fish.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difficulty is that with doing the course straight after is that it is... harder than ever to separate the author from the work mm. in a way, especially because a lot of his other books do use autobiographical mm. material. Mm. But I mean, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does, I must admit, it was an incredible experience. Like, I think that's so true, like what you're saying is that I was still so much in the world of these books. And then actually I think Caribou Island came out while he was here.
Yeah, it did, because I think you reviewed it.
Yes. Which was terrifying.
Conflict
of interest completely. I worship this man, yeah. And I also liked his book. Odd. No. But yeah, I think it did come out while he was here.
I think I thought a lot more about structure,
yeah.
After reading it, you know, mm. and we did do some exercises in his class, you know, like writing things without the letter E and
yeah.
all those constraints. Yeah.
So what about the structure of the book? Like, I was trying to, like, I mean, it's hard because I asked you not to read it and I haven't reread it, but I do... What I have is this memory of that central story, and I feel like everything kind of falls off that. Like, yeah. But it's not a sense of sort of building up to Sequin Island and then building down. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it does, it just seems to bag off the sides of it or something. I don't know.
Well, I think the title is a play on the words, isn't it? You know, Legend of a Suicide, sort of like this mythology and storytelling around the event of the suicide.
Mm.
And then isn't Legend like a series of portraits or something? So he's sort of alluding to it that way. And so, I mean, I really like the way that they're all together. But I know in some places, Suquan Island has been published by itself.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Because it's a marketing thing, you know. And I think he even said himself that it, I mean, it was a really successful book. But he said, you know, less easy to market because of its unusual structure.
Yeah.
Which is such a shame, isn't it? That,
yeah. Because I do think it is that thing, like, I mean, you know, I have, like you were saying, I've heard of people that, a friend of mine said that, you know, their partner kind of read the first chapter and then read the second one and went, what? You know, that person's supposed to be dead and that person, what?
They pissed off the reader.
Yeah, they pissed off the reader. And I was just thinking that that's quite cool, that thing where he kind of, like, each time he sort of restarts the machinery. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, in that way, it really does mimic that kind of obsessive thinking. Like, when something bad has happened, I've sort of thought it, you know, often I've thought back a couple of months and thought up to the bad event.
Yeah.
And then I've thought at it from this direction and back to the bad event and from sideways to the bad event. And there is that odd, I really liked what you said. It does feel like there is kind of some sort of force that everything pulls towards that, but not in a way that will ever conclude, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a beautiful thing to do. Rather than sort of saying, oh, you know, it's all about this and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it just seems really, really cool. That's quite wicked. What are you reading at the moment?
I have just finished reading The Cowboy Dog by Nigel Cox.
Fantastic.
Which is another one of those books like this that I open up and it just pulls me in. Mm. Yeah. And I finally actually bought my own copy. Because usually I just keep getting it out from the library, and I was like, this is stupid. You know, I'm copying out quotes from it. So it's a relief to actually own it now.
Do you write in it?
No, I don't write in books. Do you?
I do. I'm obsessive writer in books.
And then what about when you lend them to people?
Yeah, that's
and
not a worried disaster. About-
They see the inner workings of your mind.
Brent borrowed an old, and this was even more embarrassing, he borrowed a very, I've got a copy of Frankenstein that's really, really old, and and I was obviously doing stage one English or something, and it's got all these things like, you know, like fear of birth, and this is a symbol of blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I'm really bad. I love to write in books. It's awful. And it is extremely embarrassing when I lend them to people. They're just like, you're weird. You know, like, and it just seems like such, I also think it's such a sort of narcissistic thing to do as well. It's like, when you read this, you will be hearing my mind.
Well, that's probably really helpful. You know, for you.
Yeah, yeah, for me.
But
yeah,
you're right. If you're reading along and you see a highlighted passage, you're like,
What is with that? What is with that? So, and you're, at the moment, you're writing, you're working on a novel, eh?
Yeah.
And that's exciting. I'm excited about that. And you're also, you know, the latest Hue and Cry has got an essay. Well, what do you call that piece?
I call it an essay.
Oh, that's good. I guess. All right. I thought you might have some new fans. It's magnificent. I love Thank it. You. I love that so much. Is there room, I guess, you know, writing time is always precious. Is there any room for keeping both those projects going at the same time? Or?
Yeah, well, I'm going to work on I've got a mentorship until the end of the year. Well, until December.
Oh, great.
So I'm going to work on that novel manuscript mostly until then, and then I'm going to go back to the heart.
It's so wonderful going back to the heart.
Yeah,
it feels like a heart is kind of like your fish.
Yeah.
David Van's fish are your heart. That's great. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
You rock.